listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast. We've got another full episode for you this week, but before we get started, just a couple of very quick housekeeping things. If you're enjoying the show, I'd really love it if you'd hit the subscribe button, whether that's in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever else you can find us hanging out. Plenty of platforms to find us on. And if you're enjoying the podcast, I hope you'll take just a moment and rate it. By subscribing and rating the podcast, it moves us up in the rankings and shows the podcast off to more people so we can grow the audience. And the more people that we can bring into the audience, the better segments that we can bring you long term. So I really appreciate both of those things. So this week, I've got Spencer back on from Straight to the Points and One Mile at a Time. We've got a couple of news and notes items to cover, and then we're going to talk about something new that Spencer just built that I love, very near and dear to my heart, you know, finding easy ways to redeem your points and miles. After that, we've got Gilbert back from God Save the Points on a great segment for folks who are looking for dream destinations but may not have either tons of time or tons of money or miles. He's got five places you may not have heard of that are just as beautiful as the Maldives, but probably a lot easier to get to and a lot cheaper to get to. So that's what we have on tap for today. First up, we've got Spencer back with us, as I said, and we've got some things that we have to take care of from a date standpoint to make sure that people are on point. So first and foremost, a brief moment of silence for the Starwood Preferred Guest Program as it has officially died and been folded into Marriott. You've got between now and the end of the year to book the top category awards in Marriott before they add category 8. So you've got, 4 or 5 months. I'm sure availability will get thinner as the year goes on. But the moral of the story there is that some of those really aspirational properties will be a lot cheaper for a while. Spencer, did you make any, I know we're right on the cusp of it, but are you planning any bookings for any of those top tier properties?
Honestly, not yet. I feel like there's been an obsession recently with Marriott packages. I mean, my God, how many times have you seen an article or talked about Marriott hotel and air packages?
Oh my Lord. Yes.
It's everywhere. And I understand why. Like it's a big change. And so I understand why people are trying to get them in at the last minute, but it's, I think I have 60,000 SPG points, which are becoming 180,000 star Marriott points. And I didn't have anything to use it on, so I don't really like just throwing points at stuff because I don't know what else to do with them. So I think I've got some trips coming up, so I will try to see if I can work them into a fun stay.
Can I make a confession?
Please.
I don't have any plans to book any of these. I understand as a lot of folks have said, deal of the century sort of things. I certainly thought about it. Don't get me wrong, but from a family standpoint, I'm geared up on planning. We want to do a cruise next year as a family and a couple other trips. And there wasn't anything that jumped out at me that was like, well, I've got to do this before it turns into a category 8. And sure, I guess that means I'm leaving an opportunity on the table. But unless something changes drastically in the next couple of months, I'm probably going to sit out what some people are considering just an awesome deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, it's like, I guess, especially with the Marriott hotel and air packages, like I don't stay anywhere 7 days.
Right, right.
Like I'm lucky to get in 4. I mean, I have a trip coming up that's going to be a combination of like 4-2 and 4 nights in different places. And that's like 4 nights is about as far as I get. So maybe if I could have like squeezed out 5 nights in one place, I would have just kind of sacrificed the last 2 nights. But it just wasn't going to happen. So I didn't worry about it. I do my best to avoid the FOMO in the miles and points world. Like I'll let people do what makes them happy and they'll do some really cool things that I'll never do, but that's fine. That's what they want to do.
Yeah. I think once you get past the FOMO, there's always going to be another great deal in my opinion. And, it's definitely not the end of the world to miss out on any one opportunity. They're not all going to fit. They just aren't. And I think, honestly, that's a great segue to covering a quick bit about Chase Ultimate Rewards and Korean, in that I'm absolutely sure that this is a bad change for a number of folks. But for me, I've never flown Korean. I don't spend a ton of time going to Asia, just, you know, time away from the family. So, you know, you and I are sitting down for a segment next week to go in more in depth, but short term, I know we've got only a few days left. When's the switchover? When can you not transfer Chase Ultimate Rewards points to Korean Air anymore?
Yeah. So August 24th, which I guess is only about, I don't know, from the time we're recording, about 6 days away. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. It's once the 24th is done, like, transfers are over on August 25th. It's a whole new world for Chase Ultimate Rewards, I guess.
It is, and we're definitely going to dive in deeper on that. When you talk about the fear of missing out, though, last week we had an offer that popped up that I know I wrote about, and I'm sure 1 Mile at a Time wrote about. In fact, I definitely remember them covering it. And I was nervous at the time when I was writing about it because it really did feel like the sort of thing that wasn't going to get honored. It was a $560-ish business class fare on Hong Kong Airlines to Asia. And that just really had the feeling of, you know, this is truly a mistake. And I didn't anticipate that they would honor it. And not only did they honor it, but I saw a tweet last night where I think it was the chief marketing officer from Hong Kong Airlines retweeted one of Ben's tweets from 1 Mile at a Time and said, you know, yup, I was barbecuing at a friend's house when this happened. You know, we didn't realize it. And so we're just going to honor it.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually, I think Hong Kong Airlines handled this about as well as any airline has handled what they would call a mistake. I was really impressed with it, actually. Their main Twitter account actually tweeted, like, so about that $600 business class Trans-Pacific fare with these kind of, like, wide eyes. And he's like, we did it. It says, we did it. We will honor it. And perhaps a few people get to travel on our new business class product being introduced in September to LA. What's not to like? And I don't understand why more airlines don't take advantage of these opportunities to just market the product. Say, hey, that's what happened. We think people are going to enjoy it. And once they do, they can come, they're going to want to come back and fly it again. So I think it was, from a public perception standpoint, I think it was a really nice move on their part. And then just personally, I'm really excited that I got to book one. So I'm excited to try it. Yeah. I pulled one for about, I think it was just over $632, and it was something like 11 cents to from LA to Bangkok. So I'm actually going to be on a flight with a couple friends. So that'll be a nice little fun ride. And then who knows what I'll do in Southeast Asia. I'll just, you know, figure that out now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think you bring up a good point about the goodwill. And I think, you know, if you take it a step further, given that the travel blogs are usually the ones that are promoting these offers, you got to figure there's a reasonable chance you're not the only travel blogger that took advantage of this offer. And so, yes, I understand this is going to, in theory, cost them money, although only in the case where that seat was going to get booked by a paying customer. And I don't think that enough of these got sold to fill those cabins. So really, I think all you can argue is there's some extra meal costs, you know, for folks if they're not stealing a seat from a business class seat that would otherwise get paid for. And so in that case, you know, where you're flying in a seat that might have got paid for and you write about it on your blog or on 1 Mile at a Time, they're going to get publicity, which, you know, I view as a good thing, because not only do they get the, you know, wow, here was this great deal and the goodwill of honoring it, but now here are pictures of the product. This is why I liked it. This is why I would fly it again. I just see a lot of positives in them honoring it.
Absolutely. I see a ton of upside. I mean, they're obviously trying to kind of go after Cathay Pacific's market share out of Hong Kong. So that's going to be a tough project for them. So I think anything they can do to kind of build some, you know, brand recognition and build the reputation as a quality product is a good thing for them. I don't know. I see a lot of upside, and I think people forget that, like, a lot of these business class seats don't go out sold. So when airlines kind of say, oh, we definitely can't, this is definitely a mistake, even though it's tough to tell sometimes between the rates, like, you know, you had empty seats, similar to like award space. Like, don't complain about people booking awards if you're not selling every single seat. So it's I don't see this as like a huge loss for them. I actually see it, and I think so far they've taken advantage of an opportunity to just like get the word out about the product. So I know I'll be writing about it on Straight to the Points when I'm done. So
yeah.
And I know I sent this actually out to my new email list, which we'll talk about later, but you know, I know a bunch of people who booked it and are extremely excited about trying it. So
yeah,
it's a good opportunity for them.
I think it's a great opportunity, no question. And then our last bit of news before we get to your new award alerts, and spoiler for folks that know Spencer, I suggested a couple of topics to him before we started recording, and I said, you know, I don't think you fly a ton of Southwest, and there was a little bit of a guttural chuckle from him. Our family does fly Southwest from time to time. And, you know, Orlando's a pretty typical destination for us on Southwest. And they just announced, well, they didn't just announce, it was leaked that they're moving to a dynamic pricing model for early bird check-in, which is a really popular option that they sell a ton of. And I tried to test recently not buying it, and it really didn't end well. So the moral of the story now is if you're on one of these flights that prices higher, where it's $25 a passenger, using my family of four as an example, we're not going to pay $100 extra per flight to be early bird versus, checking right at 24 hours and hoping to get good enough boarding passes to sit together, so it's $100 and it doesn't sound like a ton of money, but for a family of four, it's $200 round trip. It's definitely a cost that has to be weighed in the overall price of the fare. And as I was mentioning that to Spencer, always right on top of everything, said, hey, well, by the way, don't forget about the new Southwest credit card that helps you get early boarding for free. And I said, oh, I completely forgot about it. So fill us in, Spencer.
Yeah. So the Southwest Priority Card actually comes with basically a statement credit each anniversary year for up to four upgraded boardings, which basically it'll put you in positions A1 through A15. You can purchase that at the gate or even at the ticket counter on the day of travel. Of course, it has to be available. As you mentioned, I don't fly Southwest a ton, so I will let you speak to availability on purchasing the upgraded boarding. But you know, if you're going to take a few trips a year and you're going to be booking Southwest and you want to have the upgraded boarding number, I think it's a kind of a nice way to save a few, $100 or so. At least you're saving on one of those trips, which you can put that money towards the trip instead of, just trying to get on the plane before the hordes.
Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of always or never, but I would say I just honestly don't remember a time that I was on a Southwest flight where they weren't still selling priority boarding at the gate. So I do view this as a pretty easy redemption, if you will. And, you know, that card carries a $149 annual fee, if I remember correctly. So, you know, you can essentially, kill, $100 of that $149 annual fee just by using it for one trip for priority boarding versus buying early bird, which, again, for my family of four, that gets me a pretty good amount of value to potentially hold that card in my wallet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I actually wrote about this on One Mile at a Time, saying out of all the Southwest cards, I think this is kind of the best one. It also comes with a $75 Southwest like annual travel credit.
That's right. Yeah,
it does not. You can't use it towards upgraded boardings or like in-flight purchases, but.
But if you're going to fly one Southwest flight a year with your family, like I would, you paid for the card between the early bird boarding or
Absolutely.
Priority boarding in this case.
Absolutely.
And, you're good.
So again, not a Southwest flyer, but if you are, there is definitely some benefit, I think, there.
Awesome. All right. Well, we've left people in suspense long enough, and I just want to preface it before you dive into what we've got here, and I'm going to go through the sign up process while you and I are recording, so I can comment on it for people. But the thing I love for folks who are not deep into this space are things that are based on email. And that might sound silly because, everything's built on social media nowadays and apps. But the reality is that, the normal person doesn't follow 150 blogs a day like I do. So if you want to figure out how to better use your miles to go to aspirational places, which is totally where Spencer likes to travel, his new email alerts tool is right up your alley because he's not going to send you an email every 20 minutes. How often are you sending these out? I think you're sending out one a day.
Not even one a day. The whole point of this is to send things when it makes sense. If there's a word space that's interesting, that's when I send it. If not, like, what's the point? I don't want to waste your time. I want people to, when they see an email from me, know that it's worth opening. I don't want to waste anyone's time. We've got enough going on in our lives. They don't need just more filler. I mean, like, look, there's a point to like many sites sending out kind of what's going on. Like, I'm not the news updates person. I'm trying to come at things from this, like, okay, here's a really fun opportunity where it's like, you can get like 4 business class seats on a route that doesn't usually have availability, and, you know, just something fun. Cause like, how many people just happen to be looking at award space on a daily basis, just hunting for stuff?
You mean other than you, or?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, because I actually do, just like, I get ideas and I'm like, well, I wonder if there's award space on this route on this date. I mean, I just end up spending way too much time looking at this stuff, and I find it fun. And so I figured, you know, someone else can get some benefit out of this.
So where you can find it is at Spencer's site, straighttothepoints.co, as in Charlie Omaha. And there's a tab in the upper right-hand corner of his website that says award alerts. It's in between blog and hot takes. And it's, you know, about as easy as can be. You sign up, you plug an email address in there on the page and hit subscribe. You have to confirm that you're not a robot. Luckily enough, I am not a robot, so I was able to confirm that. But for folks who are signing up, if you're a Gmail person, for me, while Spencer and I were sitting here, I went ahead and subscribed, and the email confirmation that I needed to click on popped up in my promotions tab in Gmail. So just a quick note, if you do hit subscribe and you don't see anything right away, check your promotions tab in Gmail. And Spencer, Spencer goes some pretty awesome places, including, as he just mentioned, going to Bangkok on that Hong Kong fair. So he's probably going to find some pretty interesting stuff for award inventory.
Yeah, that's the whole point. It's I think a lot of people want to try to use their points and miles to maybe fly a little more comfortably in business class and go see somewhere new that they haven't seen. I'm truly just building this around kind of what people are interested in seeing. We're going to see what the audience wants. I've gotten a great response so far. Hundreds of people signed up within the first, you know, couple days, and we'll see if they want more like solo or 2-person travel options, or if they're looking for like 4-person travel options. In fact, the first award alert I sent out actually was, you know, 4 to 9 people in business class, you know, traveling across the globe. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities out there, and I'm truly just going to adapt this to kind of what people need.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge key for the family travelers that listen to my podcast and read my blog. And I know there's a lot of you just based on the email and Twitter feedback that I get, you know, listening to what Spencer just said, you know, that's like a red meat for a family is hearing that there's 4 business class award availability, you know, somewhere in the world, because as a family, you know, it's so much tougher to find availability when these buckets of availability pop up, because you'll see 1 or 2 seats, but 4 is definitely tougher. So I can definitely say as a family traveler, I will certainly be thankful anytime you share award availability that's 4 people or greater.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, great. Spencer, tell folks where they can find you when you're not hanging out with me on the podcast.
Yeah. As Ed mentioned, I'm at straighttothepoints.co. You can also find me writing at 1 mile at a time, and then on Twitter at Spencer4miles, and that's F-O-R miles. So Spencer4miles.
And like I said, guys, it took me all of 15 seconds to sign up for Spencer's newsletter while we were recording the podcast. So if I can do it in 15 seconds, pretty much anybody can do it. It's not hard. He's not going to spam you. There's not going to be any advertisements or anything like that. He's only going to email you when he finds something special. So you really have no excuse other than to go to straighttothepoints.co and sign up for the alert today. That way you don't miss out on the next great deal. Spencer, thanks a bunch for being back on the podcast with us.
Great. Thanks, Ed.
We're going to step aside for just a minute, and I'll be back with Gilbert from God Save the Points talking about places you want to go that you may never have heard of. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. You know, one of the places that I hear about frequently is the Maldives. People always talk about how they see pictures of bloggers taking shots of their over the water bungalows, and they see these in the advertisements for the hotel chains like Starwood, and they say, you know, gosh, that's a place I want to get to. And can't disagree. I haven't been yet, but everybody I know who's been has said it's beautiful. But that's not realistic for everyone. Set aside just the money aspects of getting there, but it's a complicated place to get to, more than two flights in almost every single case, some sort of, fee at the end to make that final leg in some sort of a seaplane, depending on where you're staying. And then, food's really expensive. So my buddy Gilbert from God Save the Points wrote a post, just a couple weeks ago about places you can go to that aren't the Maldives, but are just as beautiful. And in some cases, maybe more beautiful. He decided to hop on the podcast with us again. Gilbert, thanks for joining us again to go through some places that folks might have an easier time to get to than the Maldives.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again, Ed. And before we get everyone screaming into their headphones, I just wanted to say, obviously, there's no place quite like the Maldives. For starters, these other places don't speak Devehi or anything like that, but they are insanely beautiful. I say they are fairly compatible. And as you allude to, they're a whole lot easier to get to and a lot less expensive, too.
Yeah, and I think for some folks that's really it. I don't want to limit folks. I think everything that we do is about encouraging folks to travel more. But if they're only going to have one super aspirational trip a year, or maybe they're only going to have one in a lifetime or one a decade, whatever it is, if they don't have the money or the means or the time to get to the Maldives, it's great to know about alternatives. And I think you came up with some really great ones for this list. And I think the reason why I loved the list was, it really does cover a bunch of different geographies. So let's try and zoom through these, because you do cover places that are close to the U.S. and places that are pretty far away.
Yeah. So if you're in the U.S., consideration to visas and whatnot, Cayo Largo in Cuba is going to be your best bet. It's of course not a very long flight. There's still plenty of direct flights from U.S. cities to Cuba, and it's insanely beautiful. I mean, it's kind of off the beaten path. It's its own island. And, you're going to get all the kind of benefits of, unfortunately for Cuba, very kind of impoverished culture in terms of, you're going to get great bang for your buck and you're going to have a beautiful experience,
Yeah, and there's an example of something that you could tackle during a typical U.S. spring break trip, if you will. It's something that could easily be done in less than a week if you wanted to, because typically those flights to Cuba are only a few hours from the East Coast, and there's even a few flights that connect in places in the middle of the country to get you to Cuba as well. So not a tough place to get to like the Maldives is. Another one that popped up on your list is a place that I've had a trip scheduled go to and had to cancel. But for folks who are either in Europe or can get to Europe easily, Sardinia is another great alternative.
Yeah. I mean, there's the Italy that people kind of think they know and the one they go to, and naturally everyone gravitates towards, the Rome and Milan and Venice and those kind of destinations that are so classically beautiful and exciting and of course are worth going to. But during the summer, during the spring, it's really tough to beat an amazing beach. And chances are, if you're going to Sardinia, you'll actually be able to lock in both, because, you'll probably fly into one of those main hubs and then connect on to Sardinia. So it's great in the way that it's a short flight from many of the main places you might want to go, and usually easy to connect on. But it's just insane. It's the place where you'll see ridiculously large yachts owned by the people who you actually have heard of them going, because it's just wild. I mean, the water is blue, the resorts are the best you can do for any people with points. Ed and I were just talking beforehand about how there's some great SPG, soon to be Marriott, options on the island, which offer really great value for your points. And I think if you love Italy and you love sandy beaches, you legitimately cannot do better.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point about SPG. There are some truly awesome properties on Sardinia. So, you know, folks might have been saving up a ton of star points to try and get to the Maldives, you know, have that option in Sardinia as well for, you know, a much shorter flight. The other choices that you had on your list are a little bit further afield in terms of getting to them from the U.S., but all, you know, really legitimate in their own right, starting with Jervis Bay in Australia, which is another place that's sort of been winking at me for a while.
Yeah, and just before we get there, I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, of course, on the 18th, when Starwood and Marriott combine, those hotels that we mentioned were previously 35,000 star points, but I anticipate they'll be available for 60,000 Marriott points, you know, which is the equivalent of 20,000 star points on that date, and you've got quite a while to book them. So if this is something that sounds amazing, and actually if you're a wine fan as well, Southern Italy has equally, if not more, stunning wines than the more known north, and I had too much fun with that on the last trip. So you know, I definitely recommend considering those couple things if that's part of your plan.
Yeah, we actually talked about that on the last podcast, and I think that's a great reminder to folks that those details are coming up. There are some things that you needed to get done before the merger, but now post merger or post assimilation, we'll say, of the two charts, you've got those great opportunities to book some of those more expensive properties for less points through the end of the year, and the properties in Sardinia definitely will set you back a decent chunk of star points.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so as you mentioned, Jervis Bay, insanely beautiful. I actually, unfortunately, haven't gotten to see it yet, but I've got a lot of great friends in Australia, and I've been to Sydney many times, and they actually irritated at me for not having been. And when I was doing a bit of research to see if there were any places I hadn't been that should be included, this was the one that people kept harping on, saying, it really is as beautiful as it gets. The water is just about as clear as the Maldives. And with the proximity to Sydney, literally only 3 hours away, it'd really be a shame to miss it, frankly, if you're making a trip all that way.
Yeah, I agree, and I actually did do exactly that. I did miss it on my trip to Sydney, although it was a fairly short 54 hours for me in Sydney when I did go. Last year. So definitely on my list for the next time I get back. I have not been to either of the other two places that you have on the list, both in the Philippines and in Malaysia. You know, flip a coin and pick which one you want to hit up next.
Yeah, I think, you know, Langkawi is a really cool destination for tons of reasons. It's, you know, Malaysia is considerably less expensive in terms of just about everything versus the Maldives and even nearby in Singapore. You get great rates. I mean, there's some great points hotels, there's some great cash hotels, and you actually have a bunch of properties that have styled themselves at least as close in the region as you'll get to that kind of Maldivian-esque feel, where you have the kind of huts and bungalows overlooking the water. And the water is not quite as clear as you'd find in the Maldives. It's more of a green hue, but you know, the land is lush, it's beautiful, and it's actually surprisingly easy to get to, you know, especially if you're a one world flyer with the connectivity through Kuala Lumpur, but then also Langkawi has tons of regional access with discount carriers like AirAsia. So it's a really cool place to go. And you know, there's 99 islands off of the west coast of Malaysia, and this is definitely a place that I recommend.
Yeah, it's one of those places that's on my radar as well. And you mentioned it is an easier place in Asia to get to, which I would agree. And, you know, back in episode 4 of Miles to Go, we had Angelina from Angelina Travels on, and she actually did a quick verbal review of the Ritz-Carlton Langkawi, a fairly new property there that's really beautiful. So there definitely are, as Gilbert alluded to, some great options there on points, but more importantly, your dollar is going to go so far there, from, you know, from food to beverages to the price of hotels, your dollar will stretch pretty far in Langkawi.
Definitely a lot further than the Maldives, that's for sure. And I would just say again, you know, like, you know, travel to me has to be practical. I think so many people go crazy locking themselves into these plans and ideas because they read it on a blog, you know, and I would say with Langkawi, it's a place that people choose because you know, if you're already in Singapore, you can get a direct flight there for like $100 round trip on AirAsia or something. You know, if you're going to go to Kuala Lumpur, which is one of the cheapest cities for 5-star hotels in the world, you know, it's a super easy flight. If you're adventurous, you could even drive, you know. So it's a place that for those who are looking to kind of combine practical things that they can actually, you know, sneak into a side trip, this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I agree. And so last up on your list of five places to consider other than the Maldives was a spot in the Philippines that I believe you'd said you'd been to already as well.
Indeed. This is saved the best for last year, I would say, to be honest. It is if you really want the Maldives, this is about as close as you're going to get. I'm sure you can bleep that out. But you know, but it's spectacular. You know, you're talking about a place that I would say is probably even more beautiful. You know, it's because it's intertwined with all these other islands. You have the kind of coves like you'd be looking for in Koh Samui and all these other parts of Thailand. The water is virtually untouched, and that's partly because it is hard to get to. So it's not as hard to get to or as expensive as, you know, as some of the other islands like you'd find like in the Maldives, but it generally does require a seaplane or some kind of speedboat transfer. So it's worth noting, but I would say the big draw here, if that's what you're looking for, is that the hotels are generally about half as expensive as the Maldives. That's kind of why this was included in the list, aside from the beauty.
And that's a big chunk there, considering what you can spend at the Maldives. I mean, and not just the room rate itself too, but the food. And you know, I think when you look at all of the properties that you put onto this list, you know, they all represent the, I'll call it the dream. And you know, there's nothing wrong with planning a trip to the Maldives and having that be your destination. I think the thing that I carry away from Gilbert's list is the important reminder that the best vacation that you can take is the one that you can take. You know, people try to figure out how to have the perfect trip. And I'll admit, planning a great trip is fun for me. But if you're never going to be able to make it to the Maldives, or if going to the Maldives means that you have to take 3 years off from doing other things, you know, maybe you're trying to chase too far. And maybe one of these other destinations that saves you some money gives you the ability to do something else that's on your bucket list.
Yeah, and maybe I'm crazy, but I just can't. We've established that. But with that aside, I just can't sit on the beach for 10 days, especially on an island where I actually can't even leave it if I want to without having to get a helicopter or a speedboat or a seaplane or something to take me. And so I think, you know, a thing that's fun about these places that we've mentioned is that they're easy to make part of another trip. You know, so for me in my planning process, this trip originated, you know, this last trip, I ended up going to Laos, but, you know, that originated as something that was a trip to Bangkok. And so then it's like, okay, well, where can we go that's easy, that's a direct flight from Bangkok, you know, and then so that ended up going from Bangkok to Laos to Singapore. And so I think this is a fun way, if your time is especially limited, to get that feel of a really great place without feeling like you're kind of locked into just one destination, because there's no place that's really close to the Maldives.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, I think Jervis Bay is a great example of that, where, you know, gosh, 3 hours from Sydney, there's so many cool things to do in Sydney and the surrounding areas, and splitting it up amongst a bunch of different things. I'm the same as you. Couldn't spend 10 days on a beach if you tied me down to the chair. So, you know, I definitely like having the opportunity to do other things. Gilbert, thanks a ton for being on with us again. I love this list, and I hope people take it to heart when they're trying to plan their next aspirational vacation. And I can't wait to have you back on the podcast, man.
With you, Ed, it's always a pleasure.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, while we're taking a quick break, I wanted to share with you another of my favorite travel podcasts. Back in episode 24, we did a deep dive into the awesome new Norwegian Bliss cruise ship. I mean, go-kart track on the rooftop deck of a cruise ship? Awesome. Kimberly from the Stuffed Suitcase was our guest that day. She's also the co-host of the Vacation Mavens podcast. Kimberly and her co-host Tamara discuss tons of awesome destinations for family travel. They're just getting back from their summer travel hiatus, so now's a great time to start listening. You can find them at vacationmavens.com or on Apple Podcasts or wherever good podcasts are found. Hey, welcome back. We're going to wrap up the show again with the final two pennies. And it's entirely possible that by the time I hit the stop button recording this segment, it will be obsolete. Because when I started planning out the final two pennies this week, I intended to talk about the Marriott merger from this past weekend and the value that folks had gotten from their Marriott travel packages. Initially, the value was pretty poor. A bunch of folks bet that they'd be able to get a good value out of those packages, and it turned out that they ended up in probably was about the worst case scenario. But shortly before I started to record this evening, I got an email from Marriott saying that they'd made some changes, and things have gotten a little bit better. I intend to write a blog post about this, but I think the moral of the story here is, be careful what you wish for. I won't go so far as to say that you shouldn't trust travel programs, but the reality is that the hotel points that we save and the airline miles that we accrue and the credit card points that we earn from our spending generally aren't going to be worth a lot more money a year or two from now. There are going to be opportunities where you can make a little bit of a better redemption here and there, and we're certainly seeing one of those times now with the phenomenal opportunities to redeem for top-tier Marriott properties and some that used to be Starwood properties for unheard-of award prices. But the reality of it is that over time, your points are probably going to be worth less money. So if you're trying to invest in something like these travel packages that you hope is going to be worth more money, there's some risk there. And I don't begrudge anybody who tried to redeem what they thought was going to be a favorable redemption for a Marriott travel package. It just wasn't for me. I think there's a risk there, and I think for the normal everyday folks, the better bet is to make sure you've got a good plan, you know what the path is, and save towards that for that redemption. Because if Marriott hadn't come out with this little saver, redo, do-over, whatever you want to call it, you probably would have gotten a pretty bad value for your points. And if you've been saving up those Marriott Rewards points for a few years, that first day when they announced the package categories would have been a bummer for you. This is also a good siren call that if you were one of those folks and you did think that you were getting a bummer of a deal, make sure you read my post on Pizza in Motion about how to change your category for your travel package. You may also be able to get a refund on your travel package as well. Hope that you end up with exactly what you were looking for out of that. I hate to see people lose out on what they thought was going to be a good deal. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. Big thanks to our sponsors, and a big shout out to those travel podcasts that I love out there. We've already got a couple of segments lined up for next week's episode and a couple of guests that we're chasing to put together another great episode. Definitely hope you'll tune in again next week. Until then, we've got miles to go.